So for those of you who don't know, Friends of the Earth is an international federation of environmental groups. It's the largest one out there, and we have different groups that are affiliated in about 70 countries. I'm the health and environment campaigner for Friends of the Earth US and Canada, and in the past 5 years, we've been focusing on advocacy relating to nanotechnology, which is a really new frontier, in the sciences. I have a lot of slides today, so I may have to skip through several of them. So what I'm going to do is give an overview of what nanotechnology is, talk about a bit of the risks and opportunity, highlight some science, and then get into a bit about the food uses involved in nanotechnology.
As you know, these people, you have to slow down the construction.
Okay, sorry. I'll go slower. So what is nanotechnology? Nanotechnology is basically engineering at the nanoscale, which is an extremely small scale. The measurement used is nanometers. And to give you an idea, 1 nanometer is 1 billionth of a meter. So this stuff is extremely invisibly small. To put it in perspective, if I was a nanoparticle, a human red blood cell would be about 7 kilometers long. So we're talking about engineering basic chemicals like gold, different metals at very, very small scales. So up here you can see a strand of DNA, which is about 2 nanometers long. And there are some studies that nanoparticles can actually fit within the strand of DNA, shape, manipulate its shape, and actually mutate and damage the DNA. So one thing Reiner mentioned yesterday was talking about sciences that are used in military situations and for war. And this isn't the focus of my presentation, but I thought it was important to highlight some discussions that came out of a NATO Parliamentary Assembly Committee back in 2005 with regard to nanotechnology. The potential for nanotechnology innovations in chemical and biological weapons is particularly disquieting, as nanotechnology can considerably enhance the delivery mechanisms of agents of toxic substances. The ability of nanoparticles to penetrate the human body and its cells could make biological and chemical warfare much more feasible, easier to manage, and to direct against specific groups or individuals. And to give you an idea of some of the research behind this, Israel, for example, is developing weapons that would actually detonate after reading somebody's DNA. So it's a whole new way to really focus weapons on specific DNA and specific individuals. And also to give you an idea of where the money and research is going, in the United States, probably about half of the $1.5 billion that goes into nanotechnology research each year goes to the Department of Defense for military applications. So what is nanotechnology going to be able to do in the future? Well, so far we've heard of clothing devices that can charge your iPod while you're hiking, or charge different devices via battery that would be embedded in a shirt, or a different device that would read the human motion. So you could be hiking out in the woods and at the same time charging your iPod. There's also a lot of hopes for new kinds of medical devices, specifically little cameras that can go inside the body and diagnose for different diseases. There's also talk about shoebox-sized portable genetics testing labs and all sorts of different kinds of medicines that can potentially come out of this technology. There's also some quite innovative batteries for vehicles. This motorcycle right here, you can see on a link in YouTube, it was able to do 0 to 60 in less than 3 seconds. And the battery was actually so powerful that it exploded the engine. So we're talking about a very new wave, a very new industrial revolutions in the chemical world that has great potential and great risks at the same time. So what can nanomaterials do for you today? Well, there's a bunch of clothing that are embedded with nanoparticles such as nanosilver. The underwear I'm wearing today, I actually realized, has nanosilver particles in it. Also, there's been some studies that show that a lot of these particles in clothing wash out into the environment after four or so washes. So there's a big question of how effective the products actually are, especially some of these new marketed products that are in quite normal normal products such as bicycles. They're also being used in sunscreen so that it doesn't show white on your skin and it rubs in clear. Titanium dioxide is being used for that. There's different window cleaners, and again, specifically nanosilver is being used in many products for antimicrobial purposes to kill bacteria and germs, so food packaging and so forth. So what I'd really like to talk about is nanotechnology that's being introduced into food, which I think is one of the major issues, because this is something that folks are ingesting every day. And here's a quote that gives you kind of an idea of where corporations are moving towards when it comes to manipulating our food through nanotechnology. Future generations of humanity will be able to eat any food, no matter how rich. Sugar, salt, fat, cholesterol, all the things we love, some people love, but have to consume in moderation now, will have no restrictions on them in the future. All food will be nutritious. The sole criterion for choosing meals will be taste. Jetson-style food pills will never materialize. Instead, in the future, enjoying sumptuous meals will be a guilt-free highlight of every day. And this, for some, may be very exciting. For me, it's a bit concerning. So Friends of the Earth, as part of our advocacy, we've been creating a lot of reports, specifically consumer guides, to highlight where this nanotechnology is, so that consumers can be aware, because there's no labeling right now anywhere in the world, except for maybe in some Asian countries such as Taiwan, but that's to almost encourage to buy the product. So in our latest report on nanotechnology in food and agriculture, we found 100 plus food products and food packaging products, supplements, nutritional supplements on the market that contain nanotechnology. And because there is no labeling laws and there's a lot of secrecy amongst corporations, it's extremely difficult to know exactly which products have nano. So this was extremely strenuous research to try to grab out of the little information out there where this stuff is been placed. So there's between 150 and 600 nano food products out there, according to some estimates, specifically food packaging. And there's not a lot known about the migration from food packaging into the food itself. So it's definitely one of our main concerns. And it's also estimated that by 2010, $6 billion will be what the nano market will be worth. So this is a major new player in food. Again, we have our usual suspects, usual friends. I worked before this on the GMO campaign on transgenic foods. And these are very familiar companies. So the companies who are trying to push forward the GMO movement are also at the forefront of nanotechnology. And they're the ones who are investing in this technology the most and the ones who are carrying it out. So we have companies like BASF, Syngenta, Nestle, all the big food companies, and a lot of the big seed companies. So why would they use nano? Again, to be able to market junk foods as healthy foods. You know, you can eat a cookie and you'll still look great. You'll love the cookie. You'll be able to eat anything you want and you'll be getting all the vitamins you need, the fiber, the protein, but at the same time, you won't get all the bad things in food. And that's the promise. It's also being used for more intense flavorings and colorings, so to speed up the processing of foods, make it cheaper so that they can put it out on the market quicker. And then this is not quite yet out there, but something that they're working on for the future is being able to change the color of packaging on food to be able to detect if it's spoiled, if it's gone bad. And there's also going to be different devices to be able to accommodate people's allergies. So you could buy a food and then the food will change once you purchase it to accommodate your allergies. And so I'm going to just skip through some of the products. It's being used in beer bottles, chocolate packaging, a lot of meat packaging in Germany. There's also some pesticides. And some of the biggest issues we have with nanoparticles is the studies have highlighted that they're millions of times more reactive, They can basically enter to any part in the body. They have unprecedented access, including the blood-brain barrier, which is really difficult to bypass. So with more bioavailability and greater bioactivity, there's definitely some new toxic risks. And there's also some studies that show that nanoparticles can compromise the immune system. So I was going to get into how you assess risk. Basically, you look at how toxic something is by how many times you come into contact with it, or how much of it is out there. And that's how you assess risk. And when it comes to risk assessment for nano, as you can see from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health in the US, there's about a handful of studies out there. So that would be, you know, 10 or less, which is incredibly small amount of science to be able to determine the toxicity of something. Here's some studies about carbon nanotubes on the lungs of rats, and you can see the damage here. Basically, they cut the lungs of a rat after installing carbon nanotubes through the trachea and put it between two pieces of glass, and they highlight the different damages, the darker area. Here with the DNA, you can see it more, and you can also see the time lapse. So this was carbon nanotubes introduced into mouse embryonic stem cells. You could see in 2 hours. Yeah, you could see in 2 hours there's a little bit of black, and by 24 hours you definitely have some extreme damage that's occurred. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to get to this. But for anybody who would like this PowerPoint for background information, hopefully we'll be able to put this up on the website. See if I can. And so in the end, Friends of the Earth is calling on a moratorium, not necessarily on the science, but definitely on the commercialization, until we even get, for example, the meteorology out there to be able to actually see this stuff, understand it where it is. We haven't even developed that yet. We've only begun to develop those systems. So we really need to take a closer look at this technology before it goes out on the market. Thanks very much.